Let me say this, Bible, turn to the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew chapter 20, and I'll be reading verses 29-34. And out of reverence to God, please stand as you were read. Matthew chapter 20, beginning in verse 29. As they were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. There were two blind men sitting by the road. When they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." The crowd demanded they keep quiet, but they cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." Jesus stopped, called them, and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" "Lord," they said to him, "open our eyes." Moved with compassion, Jesus touched their eyes. Immediately they could see, and they followed him. You may be seated. On this Sunday, when we celebrate Palm Sunday, Palm Sunday is the Sunday before Easter, and it signifies the coming into Jerusalem of Jesus, the week before he was crucified, or at the beginning of the week he was crucified. Jerusalem, or Jericho rather, was 15 miles from Jerusalem. It was about 1,000 feet below sea level. Jerusalem's about 2,500 feet above sea level. And Jesus is heading to Jerusalem. He's coming out of Jericho and heading up to Jerusalem. This is his last time making this journey. He is going, as he's told his disciples, he's going to be crucified. And Jesus, in chapter 20, verse 17, said, while he was going up to Jerusalem, Jesus took the 12 disciples aside privately and said to them, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. They will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked, flogged, and crucified, and on the third day he'll be raised." He's explained this clearly to his disciples multiple times. But what happens next, right after Jesus got through saying that, the mother of James and John, the sons of Zebedee, so it would be Zebedee's wife, comes up to Jesus, bows down, and Jesus says to her, "What do you want me to do for you?" And she says, "Let these two sons of mine, one sit on your right hand and one sit on your left when you come into your kingdom." Now, she might have been thinking about back to chapter 19 when Jesus told the disciples that when all things are completed, the 12 disciples will sit on 12 thrones. And she might have been thinking about that, saying, "Well, I want my two sons to be the closest to Jesus right there, where they'll have the most important seats." But Jesus had just got through telling them he's going to die, to be crucified. And they're concerned about what seat they have in the kingdom. Will they be vice president or a secretary in the cabinet? They're already been told, you're going to be my, they're with me, like the cabinet officer to the president. But they want to be the closest, the most important position. And it wasn't that James and John's mother just thought of this on her own. Because when we get the response from James and John, it was, they were all in it together. We want the important seats. And Jesus points out to them, "You don't know what you're asking. You haven't really been listening to me. I'm going to die." And Jesus asked the disciples, James and John, "Can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink?" Referring to Are you able to go through the things that I'm going through? That I, that will be happening to me? And they say, we will. We can. And Jesus says, yes, you will freak God. He's saying, you will die for your faith. You will die for the truth. But to assign you the positions to my left and my right is not mine to give. We have to follow God's plan, the plan of the Father who is in heaven. Jesus limited himself while he was on earth. He is God. There is only one. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are all one. But God limited himself when he came to earth. He was still 100% God. But he took on the frailties of his creation. We feel pain. A lot of us are hurting right now. A lot of us have been hurting. We feel physical pain. We feel emotional pain. That's part of our humanity. And Jesus felt everything we did. He got hungry. He got tired. But Jesus was explaining that there's a plan that he is following. And Jesus reminds them it is God's plan. And then he reminds them, he just told them a parable. There's a man that owned a kingdom. And in the kingdom, he had a vineyard. And in that vineyard, he went out and hired people to work. He went out at the beginning of the morning and hired people. And all for the day, he hired people. And he gave a reward, the same to all, no matter how long they worked. Jesus was teaching them through that parable, you must be a servant. Don't seek to exalt yourself. Don't think that God is being unfair when he gives eternal life to people that have worked their entire lives serving God and others just for a few short weeks, days, or hours to serve God. God is generous, and he gives forgiveness, mercy, and grace to all. And Jesus goes on to tell his disciples, you know, the Gentiles, their leaders, they lord it over them. They act like dictators. Basically saying, you're doing the same thing. You're acting like you want things like the Gentiles. You're different. It shouldn't be that way with me, with you. You need to be a servant. Look at verse 26, chapter 20 in Matthew. It must not be like this among you. On the contrary, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. It said, don't look out to see who's the most important. Now, sometimes among pastors, there's this tendency. Some people see being a pastor as being a career path. And just like you start a career, you start down in the lower level, entry-level jobs, and you work up, and eventually you want to be the CEO of this big company. And there are some people that are pastors of churches that always want to go to a bigger and a bigger and bigger church because it looks good on them. Not going to a bigger church and a bigger church and a bigger church as you have more people to minister to. But you can say, when you go to the conventions, well, my church has 2,000 in attendance on Sunday. Now, there's nothing wrong with being the pastor of a church of over 2,000 if you're there to minister and teach the truth. But if you're there to say, look at me, look what I've done, then you're wrong. Most churches are pastored by bivocational pastors who are there to proclaim the truth. We need to follow the example of Jesus Christ. Paul told us in 1 Corinthians 11:1, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. And look what Jesus said the example was in verse 28 of Matthew 20. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. He's heading to Jerusalem, heading to give himself for each of us in this room, for each of the disciples that heard him, for all those who are with him, and for all those who are all ages that have put their trust in Jesus Christ. That brings us to an example. Jesus has been walking with the disciples with a large group heading up to Jerusalem. And it says, as they're leaving Jericho. Jericho, if you remember, was a very important city. We saw it as the first city when the children of Israel left Egypt and entered the Promised Land. Remember, they walked around Jericho once and then went back to their camp. Next day, again. Last time, they walked around it 7 times. Blew their trumpets and the walls fell down. Archaeologists have found in the ruins the evidence of old walls that have fallen from the old city of Jericho. And there was someone in that city prior to coming into the Promised Land into Jericho. Spies had been sent in. 2 spies were hidden in the house of a prostitute named Rahab. And she let them down, so they escaped. But she said, remember me and my family when God brings you the victory over Jericho. Rahab, the prostitute, is one of 2 women that are listed in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. The other is not a Jew, but a Moabite, Ruth. 2 women that were not of Jewish heritage are in the testimony and the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And when Jesus is walking past the ruins of the old Jericho to the new city of Jericho, because there was the old Jericho and the new Jericho, the ruins were still outside the city on one side, the new Jericho was on the other. And when you look at the parallel passage in Mark and Luke, you'll see someone say he's going toward Jericho, and the other says he's going out of. Well, there's 2 Jerichos, the old ruins and the new city. When Jesus is in this place, you might be thinking back of Rahab and how her faith. And at Jericho, Jericho's also known as the City of Palms. Jericho was a place that was warm all year round. When it's snowing in Jerusalem, 15 miles away, you can sit on the seashore at Jericho and get a suntan. Just down at 3,500 feet, going from 2,500 feet above to 1,000 below, the temperature is much warmer. King Herod built a palace there. His winter palace is called Masada, and I've been to Masada. The top of that plateau and down by the shore of the Dead Sea is warm, even when it's cold everywhere else. And so in that warm environment of Jericho, right when where the Jordan River comes down, so there's fresh water coming into the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea is called dead because nothing lives in it, because there's no place for the water to go out except evaporate. And so it's full of salt. As a matter of fact, at the southern end of the Dead Sea, they harvest salt. And you can go to the store and buy dead sea salt. It's like, sometimes you get that sea salt, that's very popular, but you can get dead sea salt. They just have little areas where they let the water evaporate and go in there, scoop up the salt, and sell it all over the world. That's been done for ages. But Jericho was a wonderful place for them. There were people there that traveled through Jericho, heading all kinds of directions. But Jesus is leaving Jericho, and there are two men. Now, in Mark and Luke, it only mentions one man. And Mark mentions one of the men by name, Bartimaeus. You might have heard, remember hearing about blind Bartimaeus. Well, this is where he was. And this large crowd that was following Jesus, they were following Jesus because he was a miracle worker. He was the one that could make free food for you. You got hungry, give them a couple of crackers, a couple of sardines, and you had a full meal. They thought he could be the political leader. Some of them wanted to make him king by force, and they were following for many different reasons. But the blind men, and it tells us that they asked, what's going on? And they heard this crowd, and they were told, Jesus of Nazareth is coming by. These blind men were begging. Because when you're blind, you can't do a lot of jobs. And so they stayed beside this busy road asking for people to charity. It was a busy road, so that was a good spot to stay. And when they heard Jesus was passing by, they cried out. They were told Jesus is Nazareth. But they didn't use that term. They used the term Son of David. Now there's an important change there. Jesus of Nazareth just means Jesus from the town of Nazareth. And Jesus is a common name at that time. It was the Greek version of John, or Joshua, rather. In the Old Testament, Joshua. So that was a popular name. A lot of people were named that. And so there were Jesuses everywhere. Just like in Mexico, there's a lot of people that use that name, Jesus. And there are a lot of Jesuses in the world. There were a lot of Jesuses in Israel at that time. And it's just Jesus from the town of Nazareth. But they recognized blind men. He wasn't just Jesus from Nazareth. He was the Son of David, which is a title means he's the Messiah. That was a term used. They understood he is God's anointed one. He's not just a guy from the town of Nazareth. He is the one to come from God to make all things right. And they cried out, begging Jesus for mercy. Now Jerusalem, or Jericho rather, had a special plant that was used for treating eye injuries. And many people came to Jericho to get this special medicine. So there were a lot of blind people in Jericho. There were a lot of blind people in Israel and in the world at that time, because many children were born blind. They developed blindness because of diseases they got as they were being born. It's still a problem today, getting an infection in your eyes. That's why most modern countries, when a baby is born, they'll put antibiotic drops in the eyes to prevent the children from going blind from a bacteria they might have caught in the process of being born. The baby's in the embryonic fluid before it's born. But when it transfers out, it comes in contact with the mother's body. And a bacteria can develop, causing blindness. Well, these people could have been blind from birth that way, or they could have been blind because of an injury to their eye. Anything could happen. But they understood no one else could help them. They knew they had to ask for mercy from the Son of David, God's Messiah. They probably tried the medicine in Jericho, but they weren't healed. And so they said to Jesus, have mercy on us. Give us what we don't deserve. That's what mercy means. Getting what you don't deserve. The grace of God. The crowd said to the blind man, be quiet. Think about this. Many of the crowd were following Jesus because he healed their diseases. But they didn't want these blind men to be healed because they wanted Jesus to themselves. Sometimes we want Jesus to ourselves. A story I heard about a church service one day, very fancy church. And as people were walking in the bushes off to the side, it looked like a homeless guy. In ragged clothes, wrapped up in a blanket, it looked like he was sleeping under the bushes. Everybody walked past him, went into church. And so waited for church to start. Pastor got up in his chair up on the podium. Where's the pastor? Wonder where he's at. In walks this homeless guy. Walks up to the pulpit. But he realizes the pastor. They didn't want to invite the homeless guy into church. He was beneath them. The pastor went on to explain how sometimes we think people don't need Jesus or don't deserve Jesus. We do the same thing sometimes ourselves. That person has too many tattoos to become a Christian. Now, I had a picture I used to sort of shock my students. It's a person that has piercings all over the body. It's like that Skittles commercial where they got Skittles box, and the Skittles are all over. But they got earrings that are all over their face. And that's what happened. This was maybe when my high school students here. How many piercings is too many? What about this? Ooh. So even those that have 18 piercings in their ear, you know, as long as you don't have 218, it's okay. But that person with 218 piercings needs to hear about Jesus. The person that is coming to the United States to sell cocaine needs to hear about Jesus. The person that's a prostitute that knows that she needs mercy needs to hear about Jesus. It's like Rahab, the prostitute. Everyone needs to hear about Jesus. We can't look at some people and say, he's blind. Let's withhold Jesus from him. But Jesus waited until the crowd said, be quiet to them. Because Jesus, I'm sure, had heard them crying out from the beginning. He knew that they were going to be there before he walked on the road. It says, have them come to me. Interesting thing, Bartimaeus, when he's told Jesus is coming for him, threw off his coat, and ran to Jesus. Now think about this. You got a blind man. How is he going to find his coat again? Unless he can see. He showed his faith just by throwing off his coat that he knew Jesus could heal him. So I'll be able to see it later. Might have been his thoughts. So he just knew that coat is what is important. It's getting next to Jesus. They came to Jesus, Bartimaeus and the other man. And Jesus said, what do you want? We want to see. There are many people that are spiritually blind today. Jesus was showing the truth to his disciples and all of us. His disciples were spiritually blind. They were still thinking about, am I going to be the vice president or the secretary of state? Jesus had told them I'm going to die as a ransom for all men. Bartimaeus and the other man wanted to see. If you look with me at John, the Gospel, chapter 1, verse 9. Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 9. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was created through him. Yet the world did not recognize him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. And then, chapter 3. John. Verse 19. This is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and the people love darkness rather than the light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and avoids it, so that his deeds may not be exposed. But anyone who lives by the truth comes into the light, so that his works may be shown to be accomplished by God. Jesus in Matthew 23, verses 16 and 24, calls the Pharisees blind guides. They're supposed to be spiritually sighted, but they're actually blind to the truth. And the disciples were given a lesson by Bartimaeus and the other blind men. We want to see. And immediately they saw. And what did they do? Let's look back at verse 34 of John 20. Moved with compassion, Jesus touched their eyes. Immediately they could see, and they followed him. They saw the truth. Didn't go back to their begging, but they went and followed Jesus. Their eyes had been opened. They had received their sight physically and spiritually. And when Mark tells us his name, Bartimaeus, that might be because people in the church knew Bartimaeus. Said, and you know Bartimaeus? And he's right over there in the church. He said, that's the one I'm talking about. Ask him. He was known in the church. Please mention him. He's mentioned for us. Not just so we can do the Bible trivia. But who was the blind man that Jesus healed outside of Jericho? Oh, Bartimaeus, I know I'm one. It was a testimony to us, but also to the church. If you don't believe me, Mark would say, go ask Bartimaeus for that. You might think, hey, why do you want to you were once blind. How? I'm sure Bartimaeus had a more important story to tell about Jesus and his forgiveness than Jesus curing his blindness. But we need to have spiritual eyes also to see the truth. We need to remember to follow Jesus. There are a lot of people today that say they have a relationship with Jesus Christ, but they're not following Jesus. I remember hearing one congressman say, you know, I'm a Christian, but I don't let it affect how I vote. Well, if you believe what God says, it's going to affect how you vote. Or you're not a Christian. We need to understand that if we're following Jesus, it's going to affect our lives. We are going to be different. We might not go from being physically blind to being able to physically see, but we can see things spiritually. It's through spiritual eyes that we see spiritual things. In 1 Corinthians 2, 14, chapter 2, so I get the verse right. Because don't believe me. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2. I'm going to close my eyes and take closer scripture. I'm going to come back out. But the person without the Spirit does not receive what comes from God's Spirit, because it is foolishness to him. He is not able to understand it, since it is evaluated spiritually. The spiritual person, however, can evaluate everything, and yet he himself cannot be evaluated by anyone. For who has known the Lord's mind that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. We see spiritually because God has opened our eyes, and we need to share the truth with others. Now, sometimes it can be as easy as inviting them to church. Sometimes it can be even easier giving them a little tract. And there's a track right back in the back. There's still tracks available to take and pass on. It's real easy. Let's take the track of, did you get one of these? You can, or you can leave them in the waiting rooms. Because, you know, generally waiting rooms, doctors also have old magazines. You leave a track if there's something new for you. What they do with it is up to them. We need to invite people to Jesus. Because without Jesus, there is no hope. All they have looked forward to is eternity in hell. When people ask me how I'm doing, I've stolen Dave Ramsey's phrase, and I don't know if he stole it from him or not, better than I deserve. Because I deserve hell. We all do. But if we're a Christian, we're headed to heaven. For all the pain, all the sorrow, and all the tears go away. But also, there is no one in heaven that is not a Christian. So we need to tell them that. Share with others. Invite them to church. Invite them to a Bible study over at your house. Just like we saw in our video today. The guy that came to the United States, self-proclaimed, spreading Jesus. And when he went to his trainer, he started spreading Jesus to his physical trainer. And his physical trainer became a Christian. Everyone is. Don't be like the crowd saying, oh, don't tell that guy. Tell everybody. If they receive, they're rejoicing in heaven. If they reject the message, it's their choice. I'll be told. Stand with me for a closing prayer. I'll be here to answer any questions you might have. And we're going to change the sign out on the billboard and say, you're invited to worship with us, celebrate Easter with us. You may, did you see the sign of church? That means you. So, if there's anybody around here, that means you. Lord, thank you. that you give an opportunity for us to share your forgiveness, how to be saved, your mercy and love. Let us share that with others. In Jesus' name.